Oh, that's a good noise. Is that a little worthy part you have then?
Yes. Bow.
Okay, so this is episode number 2 of Rum Dementals, TM. and today we are going to be talking a little bit about distillation. So this is actually going to be spread over a couple of parts, I think, because it can be quite complicated. We're going to try and simplify as much as we can for everyone. So today we are just going to talk about kind of the fundamentals of distillation, and we're going to talk a little bit about batch distillation or pot distillation. So yeah, we'll try and keep it all vaguely or fairly simple anyway. I know it can be very complicated and very chemistry nerdy, but we'll try not to get too far into that for everyone. Keep it nice and short as well, otherwise we'll be here for days. So away you go, Mr. Mitchell. So the floor is yours.
Thanks. So yeah, obviously our aim with the whole series, as we discussed in the previous one, is to sort of gloss over everything, touch all the bases, but do it in quite a basic way. There are so many instances that are specific to one particular brand or one distillery or whatever. We will cover, you know, pot and column still more as a general, you know, the general principles. And as always, any questions, any specifics you want to ask us about or go into further, yeah, we're more than happy to dive deeper. But I guess like a good starting point is actually discussing the theory of distillation itself and the reasons behind why it is implemented and part of the process of making rum or any spirit in general, really. The last episode that we did with the fermentation, we basically ended at a point where we were left with a mix of either molasses or sugarcane juice, sugarcane syrup and water, and it had been exposed to yeast of various strains, and that yeast had been eating away at the sugars and started creating alcohol. So we have a kind of mix that was 8 to 10% in ABV, alcohol by volume, and in order to make a rum or any other kind of spirit, we really need to start bumping that alcohol by volume up. So what we need to do is distill it. So we're going to start with, in simple terms, if you begin with a mix, where you imagine there's a mixture of water and ethanol together. Water will boil at 100 degrees centigrade. Ethanol will boil a little bit lower. It'll actually boil at about 78.3. So what distillers do is they utilize this fact and they will find a sweet spot right between those two temperatures. They'll basically heat up the mix. And what will happen is that the elements with the lower boiling point within the mix, i.e. the ethanol, the alcohol, that will start to evaporate. The stuff that boils at a higher boiling point won't quite get hot enough at that point to boil and evaporate. So basically what will happen is the ethanol will get separated from the water. So all the vapors that are rising off that mix initially when it's getting heated will be higher in alcoholic content. So what distillers will do is they will basically collect all these vapors and then they will condense it down, i.e. they'll like cool it, and they'll bring it back down to a liquid. And at that point, then the liquid will actually be of a higher alcoholic content. So that is, in very basic terms, the principle of it, the way it works. And that is why they're doing it. It's why we go through this process. It is to bump up that alcoholic content.
Yeah, essentially also doing is separating our ethanol and some other things, essentially mostly ethanol and water. That's also doing, we're kind of splitting those two things apart from our solution. And like Jack said, we're doing that, you know, using their different boiling points. Easy science. Yeah, so a few things before we kind of get really into pot distillation. So sort of through distillation, the highest you could probably get is about 97% by volume alcohol. It's slightly less by mass, but let's not get into that. So it's about 97%. And basically, one of the reasons why you can get a little bit higher in labs and stuff, but it's basically just due to it will evaporate very quickly otherwise. So it needs some alcohol molecules, kind of need some water molecules to attach themselves to stop them from just being lost to the air and be pretty fairly quickly anyway. So another thing you might see a lot of, especially anyone that drinks gin, is something called neutral grain spirit. Kind of a lot of gin producers will use this as kind of a base for making their gin. And that is essentially can be made from anything that's got sort of fermentable sugars in. So whether that is molasses, as we always talk about, barley, wheat, kind of sugar beets, anything can be classed as neutral grain spirit. And that's usually about above 95% alcohol. So something like that, basically, the reason why it's called neutral grain spirit is because there's so much alcohol in there, there isn't really enough room for any sort of flavour. So it kind of just tastes like alcohol. So a lot of people will use, kind of add flavours to it afterwards, i.e. gin. So that's one thing to kind of get out of the way early on, I think.
So, yeah, I guess the difference between something like creating a rum and something like a gin, the rum, you are creating the product from the mixture itself. So from the molasses that we're distilling, you're using that raw material to form the basis of your product, of your final product. Something like a gin, the neutral grain spirit that is being used, that's almost like a canvas upon which they're going to tweak that after the fact or during the distillation to add components to it. So that is basically there as a canvas that there is a foundation we're already going to change. With something like a rum, we're basically formulating that foundation from scratch.
Yeah, they're not going to distill to, or very rarely distill to that high of a alcoholic percentage. So there is going to be, you know, those kind of flavor molecules that we talked about in the last podcast, in the fermentation one, they're going to be left in there. They're going to get carried along sort of with our alcohol molecules, with our ethanol molecules rather. So they're still going to be there. They're going to survive this whole process. Don't panic. Anyone that's got attached to them from the last one, they'll be fine. So kind of moving on a little bit, in terms of distillation for sort of the alcoholic industry, there's two kind of main ways that we do it. So there is batch distillation or pot distillation, which we're going to talk about today. But as the name suggests, it's done, you know, in a batch process, you know, one at a time kind of vibe. and then we have continuous or column distillation as well. That is what we're going to talk about in the next podcast.
Yeah, I'd say that for sure, kind of pot distillation would certainly be classed more as the traditional method, if you will. There are certainly places around the world that have been using column stills or the concept of column stills for quite a long time, but I would say on average, people consider pot distillation and that kind of methodology to be the more traditional way of doing things. But obviously, as we get into this, the overall outcomes that you get from the two, more often than not, you're not trying to achieve the same result from a pot or column distillation method. You can kind of achieve very different things. So it depends really on what product you're going for as to what method you're going to utilize.
Yeah, I think we're going to keep it very simple for today. But there is, maybe we'll talk about it probably at some point, but there is there's certainly some blurred lines these days when it comes to the kind of difference between pot and column distillation. Like, it is very, the lines are becoming a bit more blurred than they used to be, certainly.
There's certain brands that will use maybe like within their blend for their rum, there might be part column, part pot. there actually are some people now that are basically manufacturing stills that are almost like a hybrid of a pot and column combined, trying to kind of get the best of both worlds that way. There's a whole range of different ways in which you can utilize the different methodologies and the styles of rum, given that the market is becoming more saturated now and there's just more demand for new and quirky and interesting styles. People are having to get a bit more creative with the way in which they produce these things. So naturally, people are sort of toying around with different ideas. And as we will get onto when we get more into these, you know, there are really big benefits to using pot stills, and there are very separate and different benefits you get from using column. If there's a way in which those can be merged together, in theory, right, they should almost make a great product itself, if not a greater product than some of the things that are already out there that only utilizes one of the methods. So yeah
it's kind of like it's almost, I suppose, using a mixture of both is kind of like, if you're an artist, say, just using pot, would use, maybe you're only allowed to use half the colors or 10 colors. Whereas if you use, and then column is kind of the other 10 colors. So if you kind of,
we're really jumping on the we're really jumping on like the painting art.
Yeah.
Allergies. I like it.
Paint a picture in people's minds more than anything. Kind of using a mixture of both kind of can, you know, certainly spread your flavor profile a lot wider than it would just using one, maybe. That's why, you know, you see a lot of these people that are kind of these rum juices that are doing really well at the moment and really trendy, sort of like Foursquare and things like that. They tend to use a mixture of both pretty much with everything. I mean, did we try some just pot still Foursquare, or did we not get around to it?
No.
I don't think we did. We're going to try some.
Yeah. But anyway, we digress. So pot stills. Should we get into pot stills and kind of talk about what's what? I guess the best way to do it is actually describing the parts of the still and how it works.
So in terms of like a pot still, it's kind of the clue is in the title. It's essentially a big, usually 99% of the time we've made from copper, tends to be a big kind of bulbous sort of copper container, essentially. So kind of looks a bit like an onion. No Shrek lines, Mr. Mitchell.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's how I'd describe them anyway. Often copper's used. It's copper as a material itself is actually quite easy to shape. So when people are trying to manufacture these things, it's quite easy to sort of like shape it into the way you want. And also as well, copper is a very, very good conductor of heat, which is very important in this entire process as well.
It also removes sulfur out of what you're creating, which can give like off flavors and things like that. It's actually quite good at purifying the spirit kind of as it goes through, which is quite handy. The bonus. So it's kind of looks like a big onion with essentially a pipe coming off the top of it. That's either called the line arm or a swan's neck, which, as you can imagine, looks a bit like a swan's neck kind of tilted to one way. And that is basically it. And then we'll have for the still itself, and then that's usually, it will be connected to this thing called a condenser, which is essentially a big container with a coil running through the middle of it. And that coil is essentially where our booze is going to come out of our still and go through. And then the container itself will contain cold water. Usually it'll be kind of a flow of cold water, and we use that to condense our alcohol vapor back into a liquid. But we'll get onto that shortly, I'm sure.
Yeah. So as you were describing before, the base of the still, this kind of big onion shaped section of it, that is where our fermented mix from the previous episode, that is going to be put into that section of the still. Now, back in the day, when they were applying heat to this, chances are it was going to be like a, you know, a naked flame or something of that type. Obviously, when you are just dealing with naked flames and alcoholic stuff and things that might have a tendency to explode, yeah, it's not always ideal from a safety point of view. So nowadays, typically, most rum producers employ several methodologies. One is actually using a steam coil that will be inside of this onion-shaped section. That is heating up the liquid in order to create the vapors. Another methodology is something called the steam jacket, which is basically, as described, it'll actually be put on the outside of the still, placed over it, and that will, again, heat up the liquid inside and start that evaporation process. There are some quite interesting things in like the spirit world, like cognac, for example. By law, it still has to be heated by like an open heat source, but I think even they don't use fire anymore. I think more often than not, it's like, I can't remember exactly what it is that they use. It's almost like steam jet things or something like that that they have on the outside. It's pretty sketchy using actual fire in a lot of instances.
I know like a few places, I'm not sure how much this scales up to larger stills, but like certainly stills I've seen will use like either something like an induction hob that you'd have at home kind of thing, or like a sort of a heat coil almost. That again will be like sort of electric. And again, that's very good for controlling the temperature. A lot of these stills these days that are quite modern will have, basically you can get a lot of information out of them if you're a distiller. So, you know, they can be very precise about how hot everything is, you know, and stuff like that. And they can keep it very, very controlled during the whole process, really.
Yeah, makes sense from a safety point of view, from a consistency point of view. It's smart way to do it. So we obviously have that section there. We've got our fermented mix in there. It's getting heated up, and we're now at a point where the vapors that are starting to arise from the mix are more predominantly ethanol based. So what they're going to do is they're going to rise up through that neck, as Andy described, travels up there, and then, as Andy said, is connected to what's called a condenser. And there's again numerous ways in which distillers will use a way to kind of cool this vapor down, to condense it back down to a liquid. Shell and tubes are prime examples, Andy was describing before. There's cold water flowing through there, and basically the vapor contacting that cold element, it will bring it back down to, it'll reform it into liquid, and then that will actually drip out of the still and be collected. So at this point, the product that's being collected is only roughly around 25 to 30% ABV. So that is still not strong enough really to be classed as a rum. So what distillers will tend to opt to do is actually basically go through this entire process again and go through a second pot distillation process.
Can we talk a little bit about heads and hearts and tails?
We can indeed, yeah. I mean, it's all put well. It fits nicely. It's a nice segue into this section. So I guess like the kind of second pot distillation is where, you know, this process is implemented.
Yeah, so kind of these things called heads and hearts and tails are what our distillers will kind of do first and foremost to keep us safe. and kind of secondly is to kind of get kind of the desired characteristics from these spirits. So a lot of producers, not just rum, kind of everyone, will have very different cuts with these things. So I'll go into a bit more depth with it anyway. So these things called the heads are usually the very first sort of alcohols that start to come off our sort of solution, and kind of the first things that get condensed, and again the first things to kind of run off of our still essentially, and those don't go into making the final product. Basically, they're very kind of, what's the word? They're kind of like solventy almost.
Yeah.
They're very, very harsh. And there'll be like these very small sort of these types of alcohol that are very light. They're very kind of the first things to evaporate, basically, in terms of our alcohol before we actually start getting the majority of ethanol off. So
I think quite a good way, sorry to interrupt you, I think quite a good way to go into it is kind of like if at the when we were describing the first pot distillation, we were thinking, imagine a mixture that is purely just water and ethanol. Now, obviously, that's a very simplistic way of looking at it. When we're at the second process now, if you think about it, rather than just being water and ethanol, there's also a lot of other compounds in there as well, or what are often referred to as fractions. So within there, there's all the congeners that we alluded to when you're going through your fermentation process. There's all these different flavor profiles and things, and there's a lot going on within that mix. So as Andy was saying with the hearts, the idea basically is that the most volatile components within that mix, kind of like in the previous stage where you're heating up the water and the ethanol is going to evaporate first. Same deal here. So the most volatile components within this mixture that we have on the second round of distillation, they're going to evaporate first. They're going to be like the really, really harsh and heavy components. So the distiller is going to choose to cut them off as the heads. Then the part that's kind of sat in the middle, which is described as the hearts, that is going to be kind of like slightly less volatile ethanol and, you know, congener components.
That's the stuff that we want to stick in a barrel. And
exactly. Well, I'll let you take over from there. But just when I was thinking about it then, I guess, given that we've kind of gone with that theme, it makes sense to describe it that way. So
just going back to heads very briefly, like one of the most important things is in the heads more often than not is when all the methanol comes off, which is what you find in turpentine and white spirit and stuff, which is really toxic to humans and what we definitely don't want to drink in our rum or anything else for that matter. So that is another reason why we do this, kind of gets rid of that part of the distillation. And then like Jack said, you know, the main hearts are kind of all the good bits we want. We've got like that ethanol in there. We've got all of, hopefully some of our esters, congers, kind of coming through. And then the distiller will make another cut towards the end of that. So they'll notice the kind of few distillers do it by taste, a few distillers do it by ABV as well. So the ABV will start to drop towards the end of the distillation. And it'll start to get into more of our fusel alcohols. So this is kind of like the stuff that is very heavy and kind of the last thing to kind of make it out of this sort of this water solution and escape. This tends to be a bit more of our, like I said, fusel alcohols and our esters and congers and stuff like that, but there comes a point where it becomes quite bitter and a bit nasty. Kind of, we don't want that either.
Yeah, often people describe it as kind of like quite a plasticky, like smell, you know, like aroma and kind of like a cheesy thing, which obviously isn't very pleasant. So, yeah.
Speaking from experience, again, they are not good. there's a reason why we kind of ditched that last little bit as well. So that is kind of that heart. The middle bit essentially makes up, you know, what we want to go on and end up in our bottle of spirit, whatever it is. You know, like I said, these cuts vary quite a lot. So I know, I think it's bourbon producers maybe use a little bit more of the heads, I believe, because it makes nicer flavors as the kind of bourbon ages. I believe some of the esters and congers and stuff in there kind of desirable.
Arguably, like some rum producers do the same. So there are certain people that employ a method where after they've gone through the first distillation and they have that kind of 25 to 30% ABV mixture in a vat that is often referred to as a low wine, sometimes distillers will take the heads cut or the hearts cut and they will add a little bit of that into the low wine batch with the next distillation of product, so then they can add it in. There are still some congeners and elements in there that are positive, you know, and they can help bring out positive elements in another batch. It's just in this particular runoff, it's too overpowering and too much.
Yeah, everyone wants, you know, everyone wants a nice balance to their spirit, I think. And that is kind of one of the ways it is achieved, and that is through literally sure just distillers' kind of discretion, really, I think. You know, at the end of the day, you have to balance it all with making some money as well, so you don't want to make your heads and your tails cut. Kind of, you don't want to make them really big and just have a very small, you're not going to get really a lot of spirit out of your distillation that way.
I think something that's quite important to note as well is in terms of the actual ABV, the alcohol by volume content that people are cutting out of these things, it totally depends on what the distiller wants with their product. There are some that will, you know, be cutting the hearts at around 75, close to 80% ABV. There'll be some that are taking a cut that's a little bit lower down the scale, more like 60%.
Yeah.
It is what happens after the fact, which we'll get on into the future in regards to like post distillation methods as to how that ABV is brought down, or in some instances kept the same. It totally depends again on, you know, what the distiller themselves want to do with the product.
Yeah. So short of us getting too technical, I think that's everything, right?
I think that just about covers all bases.
Yeah, short of going into thumpers and things, I think that covers a lot of stuff. Which I'm sure we'll probably do. Christ knows how many more episodes on distillation, I imagine. But I think fairly basic.
I think the best way to cover it is to, as we said, we want to touch on them just as a general principle and the way in which it works and what people generically are sort of trying to achieve. And then in the future, if we're going into specific products or specific brands or countries or whatever, that's where you can dive a little bit deeper into quite unique like techniques that are employed by certain, you know, by certain distillers and brands and things like that.
Absolutely, yeah. I think everyone has a very unique way of doing things. Well, certainly the kind of older distilleries, I mean, some of the new ones will likely have kind of sort of similar setups, I think, like pretty much brand new ones. But a lot of the older ones are very, very traditional and have some quirky things about them anyway. So short of us making this podcast about 4 days long and talking about every single distillery's particular setup, I think that's a good start.
Yeah. Sounds good. Next time we'll dive into column stills.
Absolutely. And it's your turn to do the spiel, Jack.
All right, here we go. So, yeah, as always, any questions, comments, things you want to go a little bit more in depth with, feel free to ask us and we will do our best to answer, or it'll certainly give us something to think about and look up ourselves. Social media-wise, just run with it on Instagram, all one word. You can follow us on there. Currently, we're basically still restricted to our homes, so it's more a case of we're documenting new products and things that we're getting in, new rums, things we'd recommend. Obviously, just because we can't get out and go to our favorite bars and whatnot doesn't mean that we're going to stop making drinks ourselves and trying out new things. It's given us a good opportunity to have a little bit of a shop around and top up the home bar, if you will. So feel free to follow us on there and keep up with what we're doing at home. Obviously, we also post on there whenever we do a fresh one of these videos as well, and we'll always link it to our YouTube. Our YouTube is exactly the same as our Instagram account, just run with it, all one word. So if you give like our videos a little like, subscribe, all the usual stuff, it just lets us know that people are watching and enjoying and just gives us, you know, a little bit of a bigger picture about what we want to do going forward as well with the direction in which we want to take the videos. So the more interaction and likes and things that we get on certain videos just gives us a bit of an idea as to what format people like and what they want to hear more about. So, yeah, I think that's about it, right?
Yeah, that's Jack's way of short, long-winded way of saying he's been drinking heavily at home.
Research. One word.
Sorry, researching extensively at home. Yes, that's all for us for today. We will see you all next time, hopefully, for column distillation or continuous distillation, whichever you prefer. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Bye for now.